Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show, and we got a great show for everybody. But before I begin, Marissa, how's it going, my friend? Everything good?
Oh my gosh. You know what? It's officially fall. Not because Starbucks said so with the pumpkin spice latte, but
we're not all being basic white girls here.
I had to put on a sweater last night and I'm wearing leggings this morning. And I've all since COVID, I've been pantless. So
fascinating. I'm glad that, you know, the listeners get to stay in tune with Marissa's life. But hey, I thought this was pretty cool and I wanted to shout this out at the top of the show. 30 years ago today, Slayer released one of their most iconic albums, Season of the Abyss. So you already know I'll be checking that out all day long. And 80 years ago today, this fine gentleman was born in Liverpool, UK. That is the most iconic figure ever, John Lennon. And we want to pay our condolences out to the Van Halen family. You know, one of the greatest guitar players of all time, Eddie Van Halen, passed away this week with a long battle of throat cancer. And also, AC/DC just dropped one of their first tracks in a long time. I mean, the last time they dropped an album was in 2014. So we got a new song from them, and that's called Shot in the Dark. But Marissa, we're beyond stoked because our guests joining us for Just Talking are the boys in Cast of Color and our new CCS contributors, and Strike a Chord artist, The Phoenix Within. All right, Marissa, it's time to rock and roll. Yeah, that's right. Our guest on Just Talking is John Carter and Joseph Tapakakipo, our newest CCS contributors and host of the Cast of Color, a podcast show fighting to bring inclusion to the entertainment industry. So how's it going, John? How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks for having us. Thank you, Marissa. It's so dope to be here.
No, we're that's what I like to hear. Joe is here somewhere.
I know, but you know the funny thing about Joe is he's an essential worker. So he's been on the move all morning. And when we get Joe into this, we would love to have him into this conversation. But since we're right at the top of Just Talking, we might as well jump right on into it.
There he is.
The working boy. Hey.
But we'll start it off with John. You know, for the listening audience who has no idea about what the Cast of Color is all about, what is the premise of your show?
The premise of our show, Chris, we're an entertainment and pop culture podcast with a diversity emphasis. That's where we leave it at. You know what I'm saying? And the reason we leave it at that is because that gives us a lot of room to play with. When you say that it's about diversity, you can get a little more granular. But what about, you know, what segment of diversity do we emphasize? There's so many. Marissa, you're an actress. I'm an actor. I recognize that being a Black actor is subjectively different in the industry. So that's what it is, man. It's an entertainment pop culture podcast with the diversity and inclusion emphasis. And from there, the conversations can go anywhere.
And what you mean by that, there's just so much to talk about. Are you saying it's because you believe in 2020 right now that there's a huge diversity problem when it comes to the entertainment industry?
I do. I think in recent years, Chris, there's been a push for the industry to be more diverse. I think it's reflected in just Netflix shows I think there is a push for it. So when I say that, you know, we can talk about so many things, a lot of it is derived from personal experience. Just when I was working at MTV, I realized how diverse that company was and how they actively tried to be diverse.
You know what's interesting? I'm going to jump in here on the MTV because David Bowie, when MTV first started out, called out MTV for not having any Black artists having music videos, and they were only white. And I was, please, people, look this video, this interview up, because he just goes, yeah, you know, America is so diverse. There's so many diverse musicians of color. And how come it's only white people? And like, well, our listening audience goes, really? Just white people? It was great. So
right.
They have changed. They have definitely changed.
It has. And working at Viacom, it's a culture that very much was about that. So, Chris, when I say that there are different aspects of diversity, it's about, you know, pushing for Black stories. It's about pushing for Asian American stories. It's about pushing for things that aren't the norm, which the norm is mostly white. That is what we're used to
seeing.
Very true.
Absolutely. And we got Joe here, and he's got his video back on. So I want to throw this at you, Joe, because I think it's pretty incredible that you and John have gotten over 3,000 plus followers in a little over a year. That's pretty incredible.
Nice,
and why do you think users have captivated towards your show?
Well, first, I want to say that I think it's mostly because, like, most of our following is a lot of other movie bloggers, other podcasters. So I think there's just kind of like a mutual respect between everybody to kind of just tap in and support each other. You know what I mean? And then on top of that, like, some of John's friends, like, John, maybe you can touch on this, on how much, like, what the show means to them. But on my end, it's just like other bloggers and podcasters that just kind of support each other. So.
And you you guys have good memes. So I followed you before I realized who you were. No, I saw you on Chris's feed. So I was like, okay, I actually agree with that. I agree with that. Oh, that's funny.
Well, you know what? I know you guys. Well, I know that you guys are into the meme culture, but you're also huge superhero fan fanatic. So I thought, what better way for the listening audience to get to know John and Joe better by putting them to the test? We're going to be having a superhero trivia question for you guys. You guys got five questions, and let's see how far John and Joe can go. So very first question, what is another name for Superman?
Man of Steel.
Absolutely correct. You got it correct. You guys are one for one already. I like this.
Easy. Let's do it.
Number two, what is Superman's only weakness?
Kryptonite.
Look at Joe. I don't know. This is starting to seem like a debate, John. I mean, I feel like John's the one that's losing. Maybe let's put them both to the test. Let's see if John can get into this right now. This is not easy, this one. Just as Superman has been known by another name, so has Batman. For this question, can you find the one name that has not been traditionally associated with Batman? One, the Dark Knight. Two, the Caped Crusader. Three, the World's Greatest Detective. And one, World's Greatest Vigilante.
The last one, World's Greatest Vigilante, does not describe Batman.
John is correct. I think John's trying to get into this. Oh, I don't know, Joe. You better set this up. You better start saying something because he's creeping on in. All right, question number four. This superhero's alter ego name was Lamont Cranston. His show started on radio and eventually branched into comics and other media. And a well-known catchphrase from the show was, who knows what evil lurks in the heart of men? Who is he? Was it Diamond Dawn, the Thing, the Shadow, or the Devastator?
I gotta go with the Thing.
Dang, this is deep cut stuff.
Joe? Real quick, three.
I'll go the Thing. I'll go the Thing.
You guys are both wrong. You guys are both wrong. So it is the Shadow. It was actually in the DC Comics. Wow. I think this would be really cool to see him on the screen, right? Maybe Matt Reeves might bring him in his sequel, maybe.
I grew up listening to Shadow on the radio, driving late night back from the desert with my dad. So this is the one I did know.
That's a badass looking. He was like an anti-hero on a
lot. He looks straight up anti-hero. Okay, now I got to tap in.
You got to tap in because this one's now worth 2 points now because John's down by one and Joe's taking the lead as the most ultimate superhero fan. But we'll see if John can pull this off. In the movie Anchorman, Ron Burgundy says that what superhero was denied a bank loan? The Phantom, the Flash, the Punisher, the Human Torch.
Oh, wait. No, I don't know this one. Fuck.
What do you guys got?
Three, I got
two. What? You guys are freezing. I'll repeat it again real quick. The Phantom, the Flash, I heard from John, the Punisher, and the Human Torch. What do you got, Joe?
The Human Torch.
All right, play it, Marissa.
How now, brown cow? How now, brown gal? How now, brown gal? The arsonist has oddly shaped feet. the Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
Joe,
let's go! Let's go!
Man, so I think we figured it out with the cast of color. John, you got a lot of work to do. I see that
I got some work.
John, obviously you must not be working right now because you're an actor. So, like, we were all servers. So I think you need to study that, man.
Well, contrary to popular belief, I work in education. I do work full time. So it's a balancing act.
Okay, I
hear a lot of excuses, but okay, John, sounds good. But hey, let's jump right on into it, because now that we got a feel about what the Cast of Color is all about and who John and Joe is, I really wanted to touch upon this because this was big news last week. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he is a writer now for The Hollywood Reporter, and he wrote an article responding to director Lulu Wang, who wrote the phenomenal film The Farewell. You guys should check it out if you haven't seen it, listening audience. But I wanted to share this tweet up here because Lulu Wang, she had a rebuttal to what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said in the article. So what she said was, "The belief that anybody can tell any story they want is why we have monuments of certain heroes in this country and not others. This isn't about race. It's about power and control. The person who talks the most and loudest should not be the only voice we hear. In case it's not clear, I'm talking about Ron Howard in Hollywood, but I'm also talking about so much more. This isn't censorship. It's the opposite of censorship." But I guess what I would say is, do you think Lulu Wang has any ground to stand on by asserting that only a Chinese director can tell the story of a pianist named Wang?
I think she does, in that it seems like kind of a niche. This Chinese pianist is fairly specific in nature.
That a Chinese person, only a Chinese person, can direct a Chinese story? Like, not
but I don't about think that. I think there can be outside perspectives, but I do think the subject matter has to be accurate. I'll give you an example. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. When I watch military Marine Corps style movies, I want a sense of they reached out to a few Marines just to get a little bit of subject matter expertise, whether that's the way they talk, the way they march, the way they wear their cover. So in this situation, I think Kareem is saying that if that were the case, then how many people will be able to really tell different stories? So I think her response to Kareem, she has some ground to stand on, but I wouldn't generalize. I wouldn't say that only Chinese.
Because I think
she's upset that she's not the one that was given the green light to actually direct this one. This is where I'm going to come from this. Because look, I'm about, if you have a story you want to tell and it is passionate, you get the right people in the room. So Ron Howard is known for bringing in people in the writing, in around the set, having that inclusion. He actually is known, not saying all directors are. I mean, look at Mulan from Disney. Hello.
Absolutely.
Chinese person was in that room except for the actors.
Right.
Let me ask you this, Joe, because sometimes I feel like it's getting to the point now where, like, you know, you could be a hair designer, and if you're not black, you can't do the hair for that individual. Like, I mean, it's getting to that point. I mean, imagine when it's like the new Black Panther comes out and they get a new female front. What if there's just this phenomenal white or Latina hairdresser? Is it going to get to that norm behind the scenes? I mean, you're giggling now. I mean, what do you think, Joe?
Well, I wanted to kind of speak on the Lulu Wang situation real quick, because I think as far as a Chinese director making a Chinese movie, like, when you have directors like Lulu Wang or John M. Chu, who directed Crazy Rich Asians, I think you have room to kind of, like, reach out to them. And I think she actually tweeted this, saying, like, oh, I didn't want to direct that movie. And I think she sounded kind of sour there, to be honest
with right.
you. But, I mean, as long as Ron Howard maybe has, like Marissa said, other people in the room to kind of give him guidance, it might work. I mean, we'll see. I don't think there's any other details really as far as who else is attached to the film.
Well, what I would say, Joe, and I'd let you know too, John, it feels like we're moving towards a world where I like to coin things as true vision. And what I mean by true vision is exactly what I was talking about. It's like, when I see someone on screen, I want it to be true to who they are in real life. And for example, it's like the Bryan Cranston in the Kevin Hart film. You know, people were so upset that Bryan Cranston was casted as a disabled person in a wheelchair, when they're going, you couldn't, out of the 370 million Americans here, you couldn't find one disabled actor to play that role. And John and Joe, chime in. Are you guys more supportive towards that notion of true vision on screen?
Absolutely. Let me go back to the Lulu Wang movie. Is that movie going to be in true vision if it's not directed by someone who has a deeper understanding of Chinese culture?
But let me throw it to you like this. What if you are a U.S. American and you are, let's say I'm white, let's say I'm Latino, whatever. You can pick whatever ethnicity that's not Chinese. Let's say I'm a historian on the Mao dynasty, and then I got signed on to write on that film, and someone looks at me and goes, sorry, you weren't actually born in the Chinese province. You don't know what imperialism is. Sorry, I know that you have 30 years of history on it. It could be a Chinese presidential historian on the United States. And you're going to oust them out because of their skin color?
I think that happened in Mulan. She's from a different Chinese province, and there was back talk about that. Because she's Chinese, but she was a different province.
Let me throw this out to both of you. Because okay. I have this thing where it's like everybody is so hampered on the United States not being diverse enough when it comes to storytelling in cinema.
Yes.
I would say the complete opposite. Okay. We are so diverse when it comes to cinema. And, you don't see Chinese films. You don't see, like, European films, for a matter, or Muslim films trying to actually bring in other people of color into their film. You see Latina films pull it off. You see all the time that you got an African on screen, or black man, or, a white person speaking Spanish. Why is it that it's always the United States that's getting hampered on is, like, they need to do more with the storytelling on screen? So, John, you looked like you're jumping on.
Yeah, man. The nature of the U.S., because we are this big melting pot, and because we are this melting pot, unlike Mexico, where if you see most people, your neighbor's probably going to be Mexican. If I live in China, my neighbor's probably going to be Chinese. The significance of America is that we are so different. And because of that, the normalcy that we've seen throughout cinema is mostly white.
Well, let me throw this at you, John, because you are a black man. And I would say that there's been a lot of black cinema only being represented in 2020. I don't see too many Chinese films, Joe. I mean, how do you guys feel about this? Because I get that. I think it's a great thing. There's a lot of great black cinema coming out in 2020. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's being very hyper-focused on only one race. So does that really amplify the message of bringing diversity in film? And what would you like to see happen?
I feel you, Chris. I think that black people, I'm going to speak candidly, black people can be very vocal, and we have been, and our history shows that we have been. And I think it can lead to other cultures really getting the attention that they deserve, because even recently with the Black Lives Matter movement, it has led to different shit being brought up in our world and society that needs attention. And I do agree that when the conversation of diversity comes up, a lot of it is black storytelling. I do believe there's room for
And there's been a lot of white supremacy shows. I mean, Boys that I love. I mean, it feels like it all got started with Get Out. I mean, Get Out created that kind of fear, right? But now it feels like it's being overplayed, And I don't know.
I feel you, man. There are like shows on Netflix that's like Dear White
Lovecraft people. Country that we're all obsessed with, right? It's
the
all about
show I've ever
white
seen.
Supremacy. It's like, oh, we're not the KKK, we're better wizards. Ooh, and then it just creates this more hysteria. And it's like, how are we supposed to bring diversity and more inclusion on film when we're just scaring people with film now? Right. That's what it feels like.
Right, and I feel you on that. I feel you on that. When you drop a show called Dear White People, do you really expect white people to watch it?
Or Blackish? I mean, imagine if you had
Black-ish
a show called Whitish.
Awesome. I mean,
imagine a show called Whitish, and you got Don Jr. showing up as a special appearance. I mean, people would flip. People would flip. But I mean, starting to run out of time, and I know that we can tackle it. But hey, John, you had something you wanted to say. So I'll let you say.
Oh, no, I just wanted to speak real briefly about the true vision. I believe it depends on the story. The message is ultimately the most important aspect. If you find a disabled actor, that's great. But if you find a great actor who can tell the story with disabled expertise, somebody from the disabled community, given that expertise, I think it could work.
Yes, Lorena Gordon that we had on a few weeks ago had the exact same answer.
Yeah.
She is a Latinx director. And that was question posed to her. And that was same thing. And snap on your, on John. Everything you were saying, I was like, yes.
But what we got one more minute. And I want to throw this at Joe. And Joe, okay. I know you're a huge movie goer. And I know, John, you are as well. But I know I saw you tweeted out a couple days ago how you missed so much the days of the movie pass. And we just saw recently that AMC is going to try to survive the second wave. But Regal and Cineworld have recently suspended operations. They cannot make this forward. And what makes you think AMC could possibly survive? Because I was just talking to TLDR that I like to watch my shows for free. Do you see millennials actually supporting the movie theater chains once the pandemic's over?
I mean, the movie going experience was already kind of like dying off. Like the only movies that people would really go to see are the big box office names like Avengers or Star Wars or stuff of that nature, you know? So, I mean, I don't think it's looking good. I mean,
AMC it sounds like Joe isn't going to be racing out anytime soon. You know?
Right.
I want to.
He goes, I got no Marvel films this year. He goes, this is there's nothing to get excited for. But hey, boys, I'm beyond stoked that we had you join us for the first time ever. As our new CCS contributors, go and follow John Carter and Joseph DePacacipo on their podcast show that fights for inclusion in the entertainment industry. And you can find that by typing in The Cast of Color. And we'll see you guys next time on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you, team. I'll see you, Chris. See you, Marissa.
All right.
Bye. Peace.
That's right. Our guest on Strike a Chord is The Phoenix Within. It is a rock project based out of Queens, New York. And we got the vocalist who's joining us in for Strike a Chord, and that is Omar Feliciano. How's it going, my friend?
Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. I like it.
That was such a New York. That was such a New York hello. Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up with the biz, yo? But we're beyond stoked to have you on the Strike a Chord because, you know, really what this whole segment is all about is bringing the listening audience brand new music. If you actually physically or digitally pick up that record, you're going to know these tracks. And, you know, for anybody that doesn't know The Phoenix Within, you guys kind of remind me of, like, Fall Out Boy and Dashboard Confessional, like, mixed together. So my first question is, what are your musical influences and icons that, you know, you guys as a group inspire to listen to?
Well, we love bands like, I personally, I love Fall Out Boy, Blink-182, Green Day. The other guys, they're more into, like, Lamb of God.
Hey, that's me. That's so funny. You would not see the comparison with that because you guys are such a like a sob pump.
No, you guys are
pop,
like no, you
know
guys,
like bubblegum pop. I
you
guess
guys
you
are
could
from
say.
SoCal. No, I was telling Chris that you guys sound like you're from SoCal. To me, you're a mix of Green Day and Sublime, like the old Green Day. And I swear to God, I hear you. I'm like SoCal. I do not see New York. New York is known for grindcore, hard, heavy. You know what I mean? You
guys those warehouse scenes. So how did the whole group get together then?
The group got together through the guy's father. So the other three guys I play with, they're actually brothers. So their dad, I work with their dad on in the school where I work at. I work at York College, Jamaica Queens, shout out.
What a weird story. I mean, how funny is that? It's like you met it through the father. I mean, this sounds like something. I think the same story sort of happened with Cliff Burton, I believe, with Metallica. I mean, that's kind of fascinating on a level that a father figure would bring you out into the group, The Phoenix Within.
Yeah, so their dad, he works on campus, and he's always blasting music while he's doing his work. You know, he's a painter on grounds. And so one day I walked into work with my guitar, and the conversation just spiraled from there. You know, I have some sons that play music, and next thing you know, boom, here we are.
That's awesome. Amazing. Wow. And I mean, even a personal question with you, Omar, it's like, how did you pursue getting into the music industry? What inspired you to be a musician?
Other musicians. I had a friend in high school. I actually got into it really late in the game. I had a friend who was playing in bands, and just watching him play just like pump me up, you know. Back in the day, you know, you're going to shows in and out, bands.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Thrice and Coheed and Cambria for like $8.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that would be so good. Well, I'm missing those kind of shows.
I remember, like, you had to be 18 to go, and they would stamp you, and, you know, so I would wait till my friend went in, got stamped, and as soon as he came out.
Yeah, you start rubbing it. Yeah, I've done that before.
I think we've all done that.
Sorry, Mom, but I've gotten free drinks doing that, too.
Playing. Yeah, my first alcoholic beverage was, like, Claudio Sanchez from Coheed. It was, hey, man, looks like you need a drink. I was like, yeah, yeah.
I know, you're all looking around. You're like, oh, it's like, I'm stamped. I'm not wearing a wristband. Okay, cool. That's so funny. I've actually had a buddy get kicked out back when we were underage. Sorry, Mom. Some kid likes to drink when he's underage. But, hey, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Phoenix Within. And, you know, I always like asking this question right on the top of the show. I mean, I get that we're in the middle of COVID-19 pandemic. But, I mean, is the Phoenix Within currently working on a new project right now?
We are nonstop working. COVID or not, we are in and out of the studio. We've had the chance. We have friends who own studios, so we're able to book out and block time and just go in and work on tracks. We just banged out 3 new tracks.
Wow.
Working on, and the writing doesn't stop, you know, that keeps going. We have a project we're filming now for a single that we're going to release in January 2021, but we're starting the filming process next week. So constant work.
What I like a lot about you guys is you actually put music videos to a lot of your songs. And I think a lot of musicians nowadays are sleeping on that because we're such a visual generation going into, I mean, yeah, you get the radio, but we now are watching things on our phones from YouTube. And I want to see the visuals, not just the cover of the album.
I mean, you're so right. Yeah, I mean, you're so right, Marissa. It's like, you know, Omar, he's got a phenomenal vocals. And, you know, it would be such a disservice if we didn't know who that person was. Like, nowadays, I need a music video to know who that face is that's putting out those beautiful vocals. And let's start it off right now. You guys had a brand new music video that you guys just released. And this is for your brand new single, Tenfold. So let's check it out. Man, what a powerful message from the Phoenix Within, and that was their song, Tenfold. And I always like asking these questions with bands because, you know, at times, you know, I'm sure when you're creating music, you know, especially when you're jumping in the studio, there's got to be times where you're in a brain funk. You know, we all have that brain fart and we lose that creativity. So what kind of hobbies in essence do you do that kind of creates that creativity of your musicality when you can't get anything going?
Well, you know, what helps me is revisiting some of the greatest, you know, some of the legends, you know, so the ones who've done it before me and things that they've done. You know, I like watching their videos and listening to their stories. I'm a big avid reader. I love to read. So just diving in books,
What's your favorite book? What's your favorite book?
Right. Favorite book, Miss Shelby, Frankenstein.
Okay. I like that one. That was good. I like The Alchemist.
You know what's funny? When you were talking about your response about how you were like, I like to go back and listen to the greats. I really thought you were about to say, I love going back and listening to our old music to get you hyped up. I mean, do you do that? I mean, no, there's a hard head no.
I do, but not because for that reason.
Well, explain. This is kind of fascinating on a level. What do you mean?
This year I wrote and published my first book ever.
Wow.
I had to go back and listen to all the songs, and that was an experience for me because I had to relearn songs that I don't perform anymore. And this particular album is fully acoustic, and now I'm fully, you know, I'm a full band now. So I was like, you know, I'm going to write a chord book. And it was the first thing ever, you know, when COVID first started, I was like, this is what I'm going to put my energy to. So in this case, I had to go back and listen to my shit.
I love that. I mean, that's so fascinating. I mean, you just said some of your old band members are huge fans of Lamb of God. I mean, I was just listening to Mark Morton when they were getting ready for their live stream for Ashes of the Wake, you know, the 15th year or 16th year anniversary. They were like, dude, I had no idea how to play our old music, and thank the Lord for our fans on ultimateguitar.com where we can tab to our music. Isn't that pretty fascinating how there's such diehard groups? And I think that's cool that you're getting into that world, because let me ask you this. I mean, do you know music theory?
I don't, but I'll tell you this.
But you wrote a chord book.
And that's what really sparked it. So I work in a college. So I have a bachelor's now in biology, and I work for the biology department at your college. Shout out.
No way. In biology? Yeah. You're going to write a book? Biology?
I know. Who are you? I mean, I think you are Superman.
I sat at home and got fat. Like, that's all I did in COVID. I wasn't writing no books.
So when you work for CUNY, when you work for the city, you get to take classes and they pick up the tab. So you only have to pay for the service fees. So I started working on a second degree, and this degree is in music. So I took my first music theory class this semester.
Wow. What did you learn? What was the one thing that you're like, oh, I should have known that?
It's so different because, you know, it's kind of like if you always spoke English, but you didn't know how to read it or write.
Right.
It's the articulation of the thoughts.
It sounds like my 5 years of trying to learn Spanish, and I can't remember a
Duolingo,
damn thing.
Duolingo, homie. I'm going to do a shout-out to Duolingo. I am learning Spanish right now.
Duolingo makes you feel like Superman.
And Duolingo actually has a musical app as well. I guess this is like, you know, I don't know why we're giving him a shout-out. I mean, hey, cool. Hey, I mean, I think what you're basically saying is it's like you can be a musician, and you can always continue to learn. I mean, I was self-taught. I don't know music theory that well, but you just inspired me, and I'm sure you just inspired a bunch of others right now listening in.
It's definitely one of those things where there's different stages of musicians, and that's not to hate or disrespect anybody. There's just different levels, and there comes a point when you reach a plateau and you ask yourself, do you want to stay there? It's completely your choice, or you want to
I feel you. And you know what? I love this because we're about to get into one of your other singles that you guys got here. And I don't know too many all-fronted guys that sing about daddy issues. So let's just let the music speak for itself. This song is from The Phoenix Within. This is Daddy Issues.
Daddy issues. I'm weird, I'm strange. shoes. Fault lines and warning signs, sinking relationships. I fear I'll never really know what it is to trust someone other than myself. I know I'm grown, but I've got no family of my own. I feel I don't deserve one. I feel I'm better off alone. My daddy drank and worse, he caused my mama so much hurt. My mama told me so. My mama, she's got scars to show. I can't deny resemblance, 'cause goddamn this DNA, it sticks to things and makes ya, it makes me feel so sick, yeah. Fault lines and warning signs, sinking relationships. I fear I'll never really know what it is to trust someone other than myself. Fault lines and warning signs, sinking relationships.
Well, it sounds like Omar's got daddy issues. Well, no, that's a great track, dude. I mean, every time I hear your music, I feel like I'm getting ready to go to Warp Tour, and I'm going through some post-concert depression right now. And how do you feel? I mean, it's kind of depressing to see that, you know, some of these iconic festivals are going away. And do you fear with even a more of an extension of the COVID-19 pandemic, will we see some of these more iconic festivals go away? What do you think, Omar?
It really just comes down to the fans and their investment to whatever festival is in their town. You know, the Blue Ridge Music Festival, for example, is a good example where, like, the guy is, you know, one dude started the whole shebang, and then, like, he's got all these great acts falling in reverse, you know.
Yeah.
To remember all these huge acts coming through and playing there. And, you know, he sold X amount of tickets for the festival, and then the festival didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But what happened is he rolled it over. So he's like, you know, he gave the option to the fans and to the customers, really. What do you want to do? You want to just take your money back and then, you know, decrease the chance of the likelihood of this happening in the future? Or do we just roll over? So it really just comes down to the fans and the people of, are you willing to, you know, still keep supporting your artists and your venues?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, especially with you, Omar, and the Phoenix Within, how far would the band go to play live music again? I mean, there were suggestions over the summertime that people wanted to do like these QR codes, and you would scan the QR code and it would tell you whether you tested positive or negative, kind of similar to kind of what the police force is kind of able to do. You know, you see those troubled kids and they go, oh my God, dude, you got a house party here and you're positive, dude. People kind of want that similar notion to bring live venues back. How far would the band go? Or are you guys just going to sit back and, I don't know, be a Twitch video game streamer?
Well, I'm the thing about the Phoenix Within, and what I'll tell everybody, is that we're relentless. We are nonstop working. So yes, the live show aspect is gone, but it doesn't mean we stop working. Like I said, we're going to the studio, we're working on things, and writing songs, writing books. Like, it's just nonstop work, so there's always something to do. I can see for big, huge, gigantic acts why it's so important for them to be able to do these things, because we're talking about professional musicians, and not to diss or disrespect or hate on anybody. Again, there's different levels of musicians.
Absolutely.
The big guys spend like $100,000 buying merch. It fucking matters if they're not playing shows.
Sorry to cut you off, Omar. I mean, there's been an argument, though, even when the bands do come back into the concert venues, because everybody's saying that this COVID-19 is showing an example about how fucked bands have been in previous years. Because some say that, like, why is the venue taking a fee from my merch? We should be taking some of the fees from the bar. We should be taking some from the ticket sale, you know, and et cetera. And I mean, and you're getting enthusiastic about this. I mean, is that something that you would like to see moving forward?
Because these are things that were always a problem, but nobody ever said anything.
Mm.
You know, it had to get to this point for people to realize, hey, man, it's off our back, you know. And again, it comes down to the different levels of musicians. You know, the higher level up you get, the more professional you are in that field, the more you care about those things. You care about the modernization acts. You care about the advocacy in the field. You care about streams online.
Yeah.
Depends where you are. So right now, you know, if you're a small time band, maybe it doesn't matter to you, you know, but the big time guys, they're going to try to bring back drive-ins, you know, they're going to try, you know, anything that'll help them sell that $100,000 worth of merch that they bought.
Hey, did you see that in the UK they did a live concert and the boxes were so far apart and it was like only like four people box. It looked so lame. And the tickets were so expensive because they could only have like a quarter of the people normally. I would not be going there.
Yeah, no, I have to wait for that actual in presence. I need to be in the crowd. I got to feel the environment and the atmosphere.
I totally feel you. It divvies everything up. And it, in a way, it gives a chance to the smaller acts because now everything's down on a smaller scale. You get
to
personalize yourself, to brand yourself and offer to the people on a one-to-one.
You know what? That's so funny because you're not the only person that said that. I remember Chris out from Carry the Day, the SoCal Punkers that joined the show. They said the same thing. There is an equal playing ground for all musicians out there. So take advantage of COVID-19. But Omar, we got one more song that we're going to be playing for you during our Strike a Chord for the listening audience because you guys got to check this out right now. This song is called Copycat.
Not trying to be anybody else, and I don't mean any disrespect. I've got my own thoughts, so I'll pave my own way, and I don't mean any disrespect. There's a million. There's a million of them, but only one of you. Why can't you do your own thing? There's a million of them, but only one.
That's right. That's the Phoenix Within, and that's their song, Copycat. And make sure you guys follow them and support them. Pick up a physical or digital album if you can. And Omar, thank you again for joining the Chris Collins Show Millennial Talk Show as our Strek Accord artist this week. Thank
awesome.
You, my friend.
And I just want to say, I want to copycat that girl's body. That is exactly the body I am.
I think we all want her body for. Right about now.
I'm telling you.
Let Genesis know.
Please let her know. Like that is my body inspiration. I'm going to copycat it. Sorry.
Rock and roll. I love that. Thank you again, Omar
thank
Feliciano,
so
for joining the Chris Collins Show. Thanks, brother.
Cheers, guys.
Just again, we want to say thank you to all the guests that have joined us for the Chris Collins Show Millennial Talk Show. It was phenomenal to have our brand new CCS contributors, Cast of Color, that is host John Carter and Joseph DePacchiquipo. Go ahead and follow them all over social media, and Strike Accord artist from Queens, New York, The Phoenix Within. It was great having Omar on.
And Chris, who is next week's guest?
Yeah, we're stoked for this because it's another jam-packed show. And this is actually going to be a first on the show. But for just talking, we got Jesse Alks. He is the director of Pariah Dogs. It's a phenomenal award-winning documentary
that's blowing up.
So we're stoked to have this conversation with Jesse when he joins us next week. And the Blowies are returning, but the reason they're returning, and this is a first for the Chris Collins Show, they got their brand new album that's literally dropping next week on Friday, and we're going to be playing brand new music from that record, the most anticipated album, I would say, in 2020. So don't forget to tune in to the Chris Collins Show at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time by going to thechriscollinsshow.com. And if you like what you see, become a member today. Become our VIP member, and you will get all the cool access, you know, for just $3 a month. It's less than a pumpkin spice latte, right? So support the artists if you want to see more millennials in the forefront in the radio world. And Marissa, I think this has been phenomenal, fam, and I hope everybody enjoys the weekend. I'll see you next week. Peace.
Ciao, Bellas.
Let me try be honest, I'm not used to this. I tell lies to avoid having to be honest. They don't come.
You wanna put a man that's alright. You wanna be a star with your life for no.
Olympics with the flit, yeah, my wrist should get a medal. Yeah. Trying to keep my medal, I've been lost in a day.
On what low should feel like, and whoa, I'm sensing trouble, whoa, can't let you go.
Hard to go, no feelings made it hard to cope. You learn it's easily broken, then so you guard it close. Came a long way, but still got far to go. I'm